possessions ahead of the play. A breakaway for the rookie. Goes! A rocket off the stick of Pettersson.
Wow. What a set of mitts by Pettersson.
Here's Pettersson, scores!
Unbelievable. What a shot. What a shot.
The Area 51 Hockey Podcast is brought to you by the award-winning High Stick Vodka, the ultra-premium vodka of Canada, available at private liquor stores throughout the province. You can follow them on all socials at High Stick Vodka.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Area 51 Hockey Podcast. This is Sean, your host, joined by Malcolm and Brad. We've got lots to cover, so we'll just kind of quickly jump in here. We won't do a season wrap-up. Gone over that, we've beat that to death. So looking forward, looking at the off season to come, very unique off season, obviously, lots of things that I think we're best to kind of expect the unexpected with this off season, because it's so unprecedented and so unlike anything else that we've ever had before. We've had a little bit of movement already, guys. We've had today we had the Joel Edmondson trade to Montreal from Carolina for a fifth round pick. We've also had Nick Bjugstad with 50% retention on his salary, 1 year left on that deal, going to Minnesota for a conditional seventh, basically nothing. What are your kind of thoughts on those deals and how they might kind of kickstart the domino effect through the rest of the offseason? Let's start, Malcolm. What do you guys got?
Well, you know, they were encouraging, the fact that you could get something for a pending unrestricted free agent. And I think that's one of the new spins in the, you know, newest CBA, is that that negotiating week is gone now. So there is that potential to actually turn pending UFAs that you're not intending on re-signing into picks, that there really hasn't been the last couple of years, because of course everyone would, you know, have the negotiating window to talk to any player. And, you know, this gives you that real jump. So that's encouraging. You know, hypothetically, if we aren't able to get any, you know, a deal done with Markstrom or Tanev or Toffoli, you know, maybe we can work out somewhere that he does want to go to and get a, you know, mid to late round pick. So that's nothing but encouraging. And then, you know, the other deal, you know, with Bjugstad, you know, he's always the guy that we tried to get for Roberto Luongo all way back when. He's always how I'll remember him. So, you know, again, he's had a couple of injury-plagued years, but a hometown boy in Minnesota, so I think that'll end up being a good deal with him, you know, especially at half retained. I think that works out to, you know, just a shade over $2 million. They already announced, I think that was maybe the funniest thing, that he'll be wearing number 27 next year. So I guess that was, well, yeah, I guess that means Galchenyuk will not be wearing it next year. So, you know, pretty much in a single move, announce you know, his replacement wearing his jersey number and a kind of an unceremonious kick out the door. But, you know, Galchenyuk, he's a potential buy low, prove it deal guy that may go, you know what, there's some potential in Vancouver, I may be the right kind of fit, and take, you know, something $2.5 million. So he would be a guy that I'm absolutely looking at in UFA. He was, you know, former third overall pick. You know, Benny loves his former third overall picks. So he's definitely a guy that I'd look at.
Well, and Jim Benning, I mean, today we'll just kind of switch gears here. The Jim Gregory Award was announced. Jim Benning coming in sixth with 3 first place votes. Lou Lamoriello ultimately taking it home. Bro, what do you think of the, like, where Jim Benning ranks as far as his peers go? And does that say anything about how the market should receive him? Does that change anything?
With this award in particular, I think it's just the way they give it out is very confusing. And I don't think it's worded properly. And it's definitely really hard to nominate someone, because it takes multiple years to build a team. It's not just a one-off or a couple seasons. Right now, I think Sakic is the best GM in the league personally. I think Lou's definitely up there as well, but I don't know if I'd have Lou Lamoriello winning it. I'm not surprised Benning got votes, though. I mean, we do have a lot of key pieces that a lot of other teams would definitely love to have. So by that alone, I understand how he got votes. I think sixth is a little high for him. I put him maybe around somewhere between 10 and 25, somewhere in there. It's a big range for him, but depending on this offseason, I guess he can go higher or lower.
That's fair. Kind of in the middle area there. It is a weird award, right? Like I think this year more than any other has really cemented that the awards are like the definition of awards is lost on whoever's voting on them. And I mean, we're seeing stuff like Austin Matthews getting votes for the Selke. Like, I've never seen a more ridiculous vote than Austin Matthews getting the Selke.
Did you see Eric Goodbranson got a vote for the Lady Bing?
Yeah, that's
true. But that one makes sense. Apparently, he is an absolute sweetheart.
He's good looking and a sweetheart. I think,
Sean, you have a point there, but I think, again, you've actually kind of got it reversed. How the NHL awards are defined are stupid. Yeah. How they actually judge and award each one is it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. You know, again, we had Michael Russo talking about Cale Makar's previous playoffs being a deciding factor between him and Quinn Hughes. Well, it's not the rookie award for last year. It's this season.
Yeah.
But for some reason, that factors. And I think, again, you know, another shameless plug for our episode with Jay Fresh. He was talking about how this award is defined for the GM. It's simply how much better you made your team this year. And to drive the point home, he said, and I'm paraphrasing here, but, you know, you could trade your next 1,000 first round picks out in a year, which, you know, for a second round pick out the door, Tyler Madden out the door. But those returns did help this year's team significantly improve, go from, you know, the team that picked 10th overall last year to a team that, you know, made it to the Elite Eight in the playoffs. So based on their stupid definition of how the award is defined and awarded, I agree. Same with Jim Nill. You know, again, you wouldn't necessarily go, he had a great season or elite work there, but, you know, Pavelski, Perry,
yeah.
Cap friendly deals. So when you peel back and actually read their stupid definition, it actually makes sense. But yeah, again, of course, everyone's going to misconstrue that and Warwoop and Pat Benning on the back that he's the sixth best general manager. If we're doing a fantasy draft of general managers, there's no way Benning comes off the board at six.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be dumb fest on Twitter, though, for sure.
Well, and there's no way Lou Lamoriello goes first, right? Like, we can, to me, that's the ultimate, like, what is the value that you put into the rankings of this? And if everybody wants to run around dunking on people because Benning came sixth, well, does that suggest that Lou Lamoriello is indeed the best general manager in the league? Well, no, right? Like, he barely did anything to that team. Barzal was already there. He lost Tavares a couple seasons ago. He added Pageau for a truckload of draft picks at the deadline. But ultimately, like, what did he do?
That's exactly it again, right?
Yeah.
Draft picks out, doesn't matter. He added Pageau.
Yeah.
You know,
well, he added
30 goals.
A first, second, and third round pick for Pageau, which has been great.
I'm 100% with you. Not a good trade.
Wow. And then, but again, Semyon Varlamov. Trade,
but by how they award this.
Yeah, I mean, Semyon Varlamov, good pickup. I like that.
Absolutely.
But aside from that,
Away from Leonard to do it.
Exactly. Yeah. Is there anything that jumps out?
Doesn't factor.
No.
So again, everyone in Vancouver, be ready for Cale Makar to win the Calder. Quinn Hughes isn't winning it. Get ready right now. Prepare yourself. It's going to come up. We don't know what day it is, or at least I don't know what day it is, but you know, they're just going to randomly announce it before the game and you're going to forget about it. And it's going to be Cale Makar and it's going to be a shitstorm on Twitter.
Yeah.
Just relax. It doesn't matter. It, in fact, helps us in negotiating with his contract, because if he had the Calder on top of all this, you know, we're talking 20 plus, more like 22, 24 to wrap up these two guys long-term, and that's not good for us.
Does any other sport, major sport, have an award for a GM of the year? Like, isn't that not just the dumbest award to give out? Like, that has to be...
I like the idea of it, but you have to have some way of actually... To me, you need to actually standardize some qualifications for it. And I know, like, the Professional Hockey Writers Association votes on it, or their peers vote on it, but clearly it's being lost. Like, nobody can watch all the games, right? So, like, you have Toronto media people who think Auston Matthews is the hottest thing since sliced bread, and he's great at all aspects of the game. But that's ridiculous, right? Like, obviously, he's a very one-dimensional player. I would never even consider him to be a defensive forward at all. And then you, on the flip side, with Jim Gregory Ward, how do you measure somebody's success over a one-year span, right? Like, what do we, like, going back to the episode with Jay Fresh, if you unload a bunch of draft picks or prospects and you completely empty your cupboards for the next 10 years, as long as you're good for that season, well, hell, you're GM of the year, aren't you, right? So how does that work? And I think they need to come up with better, more clear definitions for each awards, because the metrics are there. Like, it's easy to actually break down who should win these awards, but the people voting on them aren't looking at any of those. And I mean, to your point too, Malcolm, the Cale Makar thing, why is it that right at the beginning of the season, Quinn Hughes has to be three times better than Cale Makar to get this award? That doesn't make any sense.
Because he plays in a different time zone. That's, you know, that much further past their bedtimes, right?
Like, he was better at almost every metric, but because he 100%. Wasn't head and shoulders above Cale Makar, Cale Makar will walk away with the Calder Trophy.
Because he's right-handed and played on a better team. He's a year older. I'm willing to admit I'm absolutely an ageist when it comes to, you know, hockey players. You know, to me, that should factor, and it doesn't. But I think actually, Sean, I don't know if you accidentally stumbled upon, I think you nailed the right answer, though. And it's writers reading. Writers are literal people, right? And they're the ones voting on it. So they read the definition of the, you know, how the award is handled, and they give their literal translation of how that award is, you know, defined.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm just like, you know, to me, it's at this point, it's the Oscars. It was good to get PD, you know, because we haven't had one in forever, but they're meaningless, bought and paid for awards, and they don't actually represent who is the best player or, you know, in their field or whatever category. So it is what it is. You know, they keep awarding them. The comedy shows are normally typically pretty lame. So I think it's one that, you know, I think I'm just crossing off my schedule moving forward.
Yeah. I mean, I think back even to 2011 when we were clearly the best team in hockey through the entire season, even the playoffs, and like the amount of hardware that went out for those years, like there should have been way more hardware. I think back to 2007 when Luongo was incredible and should have won the Vezina. Like there's so many times where Canucks have been gypped in the awards. We should be used to it. But I think now, since we've seen such special players in this special core, and the league actually likes the players that we have now, instead of just making fun of them or hating them, it feels almost like a new thing, like a new wound, because we're in a new era for the Canucks. We haven't had a very likable team really ever, right? Like, we've always been the shitheads that nobody liked, and I loved that, but it does suck to not get the recognition. But that being said, it does help with negotiations later on, that we could say, hey, look, he wasn't the Calder winner, as much as that's kind of finding the only flaw in Quinn Hughes's first season.
You need something, though, right?
Yeah, that's really all there is. Yeah. Like, the guy did it all.
His agent's gonna have a loaded deck.
Oh man, yeah. Him and Pettersson both, like, the agents are gonna be laughing. But we won't get into that, because that's a little bit further ahead of the schedule for us. And I mean, we've already talked before about how we hope that the Canucks have them very high on their schedule, very early on in their plans to extend both Pettersson and Hughes, because it's easier to kind of plan around. But that being said, some of the trades that happened earlier, we'll jump back to that. Who do you think that the Canucks can reasonably trade out of their bottom six to kind of clear some room for either young guys coming up or some kind of cheap bets out of free agency or trades? Is there like a one or two guys that you think are a much easier trade chip now than before the playoffs?
Sutter. Sutter's got 1 year left on his deal. He had a good showing. Maybe he's the kind of guy that a team that's struggling defensively could use his services, right? Especially with training salary. I think if we do that, then he's a really good asset as well. I think Sven Berchi's another guy that you can trade. And, I mean, you're sending him to the minors anyway, so you're going to have to eat some salary. You might as well just get rid of his whole contract there, right? So those would be the two guys I think we could potentially move.
Yeah, I agree. Malcolm, is there anybody that kind of jumps out to you, maybe aside from Sutter?
Yeah, Sven Berchi would be the other one that I think there's a chance. Apparently, you know, we were close to getting him done at the deadline last year. You know, the return would be minimal, but, you know, there could be something said for, you know, the cost control of you know, a known asset, you know, especially in a year that, you know, again, teams may not be able to attract other players otherwise. So I think those are definitely the two that become more attractive. I still can't imagine, you know, getting out of Beagle or Roussel. Or of course Erickson, you know, it's been encouraging what Benning has been saying and doing, and you know the doing is no contract extensions for some of these people. You know, the fact that apparently Tanev hasn't even, you know, been talked to in months, clearly, you know, they're shutting the door on that book. They're taking a hardline stance with Markstrom. We talked about that a little bit in the last episode, but, you know, 5x5 is the rumored deal, and I think there's good reason to believe that that's going to happen. But of course, you know, they don't want to announce it until they have an opportunity to trade Fleury, because of course, you know, everyone knows Vegas can't have $12 million on the books next year. So, you know, easier to move Fleury before that deal's announced, and, you know, the distraction. So plenty of reason to be secretive on that. So, you know, encouraging so far what's been doing, you know, been going on. Hopefully there's some talks that are going on, at least preliminary, about, or, you know, again, maybe Pettersson and Hughes have said, we just want to ride it out. We'll talk to you next summer. But I think, you know, at some point that question is going to have to be asked and answered, to, you know, to know exactly what's going on. And, you know, because, you know, those are the building blocks that you're, you know, everything else factors on. So, really, signing anyone to term, you know, is irresponsible until you know, have a definitive answer on those.
Well, and it's difficult to project this year. Like, usually I feel like we have a kind of a ballpark idea for where players would sign, what their value could be or would be. But this year is different because of everything that's happened. We're in a pandemic season. We're playing bubble hockey. We're dealing with a flat salary cap and a really poor free agent class, aside from the goaltending. So it's a very weird anomaly of a off season here. So it's difficult to project. I know, like, I've seen some numbers for Toffoli that are pretty loaded as a projection. I think if he's north of 5, you have to walk away. And he's north of 4 years, you have to walk away. Like, you just have to kind of hardline. Like what they're doing with Markstrom. One thing that really stood out to me that's given me optimism is Jim Benning saying that, or having that, like, this internal belief reported that they believe they can trade Sutter and or Erickson. If they can offload both, that's $10 million in cap space. That frees up a ton to now revamp the blue line. Maybe sign Markstrom again, keep Toffoli. Like, a lot of the things that we're worried about going into this offseason are immediately rectified if you can clear one or both of those two. I mean, from there, Berchi's gravy. I do think Berchi gets moved in some way, even if it's just a buyout. I don't think he'll be in the organization anymore. He needs a fresh slate somewhere else. It's what's best for him. Another thing that's really jumped out to me was the Francesco Aquilini letter to the fans, the open letter. Did you guys get a chance to read through that?
No, I did not.
No?
I did, yeah.
So reading through that, did you get the impression that this was going to be a team that spent the salary cap? Because I did. I got that.
That was actually I tweeted it out as soon as I got it. And yeah, you know, it would be weird for him to put out something like that and then, of course, you know, enforce an internal cap.
Yeah.
And you know, that is the wonderful thing about him. You know, he's certainly not perfect, but he's not flawed in all areas. And he has shown that he's absolutely willing to spend to the cap before. You know, there's that weird Luongo thing that we talked a little bit about. But, you know, there, other than that, you know, he's at least done his best to spend to the cap when it made, when it's made sense. So, you know, obviously it remains to be seen. You know, if we do have an internal cap, I honestly don't know how any of those three UFAs are back.
Yeah.
You know, you're doing a lot, you know, major cost cutting, you know, if it's, you know, $5-10 million that you're potentially, you know, having an internal cap on. But, you know, we'll have to cross that bridge when we come to it. I'd expect them to announce it because it would, you know, simply be too obvious or weird otherwise. But yeah, that would be a real curveball.
There, it's interesting to see some of the teams that are kind of enforcing an internal cap. And I mean, you could put aside like the small market ones because those ones aren't overly surprising. But teams like Pittsburgh are reportedly a team with an internal cap set. And that's why they're trying to cut costs to be able to keep under that. So like one of the things that I would be doing, and I think this is a very special season for that reason, is that if you're able to take some of these guys that teams are trying to offload to create some space, like you can end up getting guys for really cheap, for very below market trade returns. And I mean, the problem for the Canucks is that they ultimately don't have the salary cap space to take advantage too much of everybody, but there is the option and the opportunity to do so. And I think that if they're able to, I would stay away from guys like Bjugstad, but like you mentioned, Galchenyuk, like that's a potential buy low option. Guys like Domi out of Montreal have been tied to Vancouver for a little bit. Josh Anderson out of Columbus. I would kill to have Josh Anderson out of Columbus, a great buy low option. I think we see a lot. The
other guy I floated was Christian Fisher out of Arizona, had a down year, but you know, I like a lot of the tools and, you know, him for Jake Virtanen straight up, give each of them a different change of scenery. Obviously Jake would be nice and out of the spotlight in Arizona. You know, I'm sure Christian Fisher would be very happy to come to a Canadian city. You know, to me, he's a, you know, ideal kind of middle six right winger, coming off a down year RFA. So, you know, hopefully you could lock him up for a couple of years cheap and he, you know, not, you know, I obviously delicately throw this out, but kind of be a Burroughs light type of player.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I like you mentioned the tools that he has. And I mean, we're used to talking about that with Jake Virtanen. But at this point, I think we've all come to terms with the fact that he will never learn how to use them properly. The guy can have a full tool shed, but if he's still using the wrong end of a hammer, he's no good, right? Like at some point, we're going to have to move on, flip him for assets. I think if they were to do, as you kind of thrown out there, the Fisher trade, we'd be able to get assets back because Fisher did have quite a down season. I mean, we'd probably get Fisher and a mid-round pick and or something else. And I think it's going to be stuff like that that helps the Canucks to improve while cutting costs and taking advantage of the trade market as it sits right now, which this is going to be a fun option.
Potentially be a fit for Berchi because, you know, the other thing about Arizona is they have problems attracting UFAs, right? Mm-hmm. So someone who doesn't have necessarily control of their destiny there and can be traded may be more attractive to them than someone else.
True, yeah.
Admittedly, I don't know, but it's, again, potential that, you know, Berchi's been paid in some bonus, so would be one of those cap hits that would be attractive to a team that, because of course, less actual dollars than cap hit dollars.
There's been a couple teams that I've been like just personally connecting to Berchi as possible placements. And one of them being Columbus, they've got a lot of cap space there. He's familiar with John Tortorella from his time here in Vancouver. He played pretty significant minutes under Tortorella, so could be a fit there. Detroit as well. I mean, Detroit, I think, at this point can really gouge a lot of teams and do some damage. One of them that...
A ton of cap space.
A ton of opportunity for people to be top line or top pairing D-men, or lots of opportunities in our organization as they start fresh. And kind of touching on, there was suggested in the 31 Thoughts podcast with Elliot Friedman and Jeff Merrick that Detroit might be eyeing up Boston, sizing up Torey Krug and Zdeno Chara, and just kind of stealing the tandem, because Boston honestly doesn't have the room to keep both, or they might not even be interested in keeping Zdeno Chara at all. So Detroit, being that they can park a Brinks truck anywhere, that could be an option for setting a culture in their organization, because that's ultimately where they sit right now.
You know, I really like Krug in Detroit. I think that one makes a ton of sense. And he has kind of said, you know, listen, this is my time to, you know, actually hit on UFA. So I think, you know, that almost again is a, you know, signal that he won't be back. But I'm pretty sure Chara said it's Boston or bust for him. You know, it's either he'll resign in Boston if they can work something out, or he'll retire because he's, you know, 1,000 years old.
I didn't get the impression he was Boston or bust.
I know you have this secret theory that you'd really love to see him in a blue and green jersey, which I can't even really mutter the words.
But. I don't know if I could talk about this on here. I had to share those in the DMs.
Sorry, yeah. More DMs outed. What a travesty.
Expose him, Malcolm. Expose him.
Yeah, expose, you know what? DMs.
I think I now have to kind of explain it a little bit. So yeah. It is an interesting idea. I kind of floated this idea out there as like a Matt Sundin for the blue line. And the reason why, like I personally, like I look back at the Sundin signing and a lot of people hated it, but I think it was so important moving forward with that core that they learn from a guy at that stage that has been there, done that. Chara has ultimately been there forever, right? Like he's been to the finals multiple times. He won, really? Obviously.
Thanks for the history lesson, Sean.
We won't talk about that.
Be reminded of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Your pitch is going terribly so far, by the way.
But the thing is, so a lot of the forwards have gotten playoff experience now, which I mean, I don't think is all that crazy important, but a lot of people have found importance in that. And I think part of that is general managers finding a lot of importance with it. The blue line, however, is going to be very young and very, very inexperienced going forward. And for Char to come in and at that position and be able to teach Jack Rathbone, Brogan Rafferty, potentially Olli Juolevi, like that would be a really good guy to bring in for that particular reason. Obviously, we'd all have to get over the fact that it's Chara and the history behind it. But we did it with Sundin. He was like,
Sundin didn't beat us in the Stanley Cup final. It would be like Messier.
And Sundin at least can move a little bit. Like Chara's just gonna stand there like another Myers. Unless they're gonna make build our own like towers there. Like there's no point. Like
see, that's the other thing. We would have the tallest blue line average.
And there is stats to back up that all you need is to be tall and you'll be a successful NHL defenseman.
Yeah. That's right. He might even win a Norris in Vancouver just because of
So of course, again, you're one times $6 million, because that's the contract that always sinks us, the $6 million contract.
That's right. Yeah. So like cool. I think that it would be I'm not completely sold on it, obviously, but it was one that I floated out there as like a possible.
I didn't call you out there.
Yeah. You know who would be actually fairly interesting? Because I'm not particularly sold.
You set a nice low bar.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this is honestly along the same grain. So take it with like as little salt.
Is he going to say Marchand here? Or
no.
This is a full heel turn. Again, he hasn't beat us. Well, okay, he beat us in 2013, but the refs, that was just atrocious. We were a mess. But
we also beat him when it mattered, right?
Exactly.
So here's the argument that could be used for Joe Thornton. I mean, the guy's old. He's looking for a run at the cup. He could come in fairly cheap, but he would play third line center, right? Great on faceoffs. He'd be an actual leader in the room, somebody that's, again, been there, done that. I would much rather Joe Thornton be setting the culture than Brandon Sutter, as great as he seems to be in the room. What is Brandon Sutter really
accomplished?
What's
the difference between those two guys, though? Like, they're both just good guys. Like
Sutter and Thornton? Thornton has a elite level.
Yeah,
they're both good. They're, as a person, for like an in-the-room guy, they're both just beauties. Like,
oh, yeah. I mean, in the room, there's really no difference, right? Like, Sutter's not a cancer. But as far as, like, Thornton's led a team. Like, he's actually led a team for the better part of a decade.
Thornton's better in this situation.
And
I mean, then we can bring him on as like a coach or something. Why put him on the ice?
He wants to play still, right? Like, he definitely wants to play still.
Compared to your Chara idea, I think it's good.
Like, yeah, but I mean,
then you theoretically shift Gaudette to the right wing on that side. Because it sounds like Levo may not be back, which obviously isn't welcome news. And, you know, Vertanen's gone, you know, hopefully, you know, let's count on Sutter being gone. Let's count on Berchi being gone. So, you know, that helps us cap-wise for sure. So then
could
it
probably
really
come
becomes
in super cheap, like a Spezza-like deal. I honestly don't see him costing a lot.
I could see that one.
He wants to win a cup.
Seemed to like the West Coast, right?
Yeah.
You think, okay, the thing for Thornton, I could see him maybe joining like mid-season, kind of like halfway through the year.
Well, then it's a full Sundin for sure.
Yeah. See, I don't really want him mid-season though. Like, the dude's old, right? Like, I want him to have time to get up to speed.
Oh, okay. I see what you mean. I see it like the other way. I see like he's not going to be able to play a full year.
Oh, see, I think he can, especially in lower minutes, like third line center role, right? Like, he's probably only going to be playing 10, 12 minutes a night, realistically.
Because, yeah, that third line doesn't get a ton of time on our you know, how Green deploys him.
I think he's got miles left in him. I don't think he's got lots, but I think he's got one season for sure still in him.
It did seem to indicate that he's coming back.
Yeah. So I wouldn't be opposed. Like, he's definitely not returning to San Jose, right? Like, he was pissed he wasn't traded at the deadline. He wanted to go to a cup contender. Vancouver went to the second round. They're sure a hell of a lot closer than San Jose is. And ultimately, there's actually a spot here for him. I mean, if he can teach Gaudette how to play center better, I mean, that would be huge. That'd be huge.
For sure.
So I've just floating a couple old vet buy low options out there. Obviously, one being much better than the other. But I think this is kind of the stage that we're at, that we can look at some vets like that to, we've got the culture, but to just kind of push us that next step, right? Like, in 2007 and all those years, we were good, right? Like, we were good, a good team in those years, but we didn't hit that elite level until after the Dimitri Sundin years.
Yeah. So, I think if we're going to go for a bio guys, maybe you go for a little bit of speed then instead. Like, Fast is available from the Rangers. That guy's got mad wheels. Eric Hall is really fast too, right? There's a couple of guys that got some wheels there. Maybe you target one of those guys and get them in. Just take your chance with them, right?
Ah, I like both those options. Yeah.
Improving the speed of the team would be a huge element for sure if we can pull that off too.
Yeah. You know who's another guy out there that I think that Edmonton's just going to straight up walk away from cap casualty wise? Andreas Athanasiou, very fast. Like, that dude's
fast.
Got wheels on him. Like, for kind of a middle six, he's an RFA, but I don't think he's going to be qualified.
He's an RFA, but yeah.
I think we'll see a lot of RFAs not qualified and turn into UFAs this year. And I think Athanasiou will be one.
Yeah, Athanasiou is a 30-goal scorer before, so on a bad Detroit team.
On a bad Detroit team.
He's got hands.
I'd definitely go for him.
Like, could you imagine? It's like, say you throw him on the third line. That's your Levo replacement, right? Like, as much as I hate losing Levo, that's your guy that can fill in the spot, as long as you can bring him in fairly cheap.
That's the key with all these deals, right? They got to be on the right contracts.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see going forward here. Like, it's going to be an interesting offseason. I think there's going to be a lot of stuff moving. Different teams are pretty loaded in various positions. The expansion draft's coming up. That's another wrinkle in all of it. And, of course, the roster freeze right before the expansion draft. So I think teams are going to be wanting to move on things this off season right now. And with the uncertainty around everything, I'd be looking to offload contracts right away. And I think Jim's starting to run the phones. So, I mean, we got lots to look forward to. I'm excited about this off season and getting going here with our podcast. We've got lots of stuff in the works and planned out here. Excited to kind of unveil those. I did want to just kind of throw out, we are open to having two new members potentially join our team. We are looking for a graphic designer and a producer. So if anybody kind of fits under those bills or would like to learn those, obviously I can't teach you any graphic design, but I can teach you how to produce. And we can kind of go from there. I'd be happy to add some new people to our team, and we're constantly growing. We've got lots of stuff in the works, and more hands on deck make light work. So thanks again for listening to our podcast. Thanks guys for joining me here as we kind of do a off season preview and look forward to some of the big moves from Jim Benning and co.
It's a fun season.